proclaiming the gospel to the Jew first and also to the Greek. Shalom and welcome to the Everlasting Nation Broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. I'm your host, Aaron Broughton, and today I'd like to share with you a Hebrew word study of sorts called the Hebrew Nugget. Now, this material is provided by our dear friend in ministry, Jackie Powell. You can read more about her ministry and find valuable Hebrew word study tools at lightforisrael.org. Now then, let's dig into this lesson. The Torah portion we are discussing today takes its name from the very first word of the biblical text, Beira. This word is the future tense of the verb and root ra'ah, and means to see. This root or shorish occurs 15 times in this Torah portion. Let's start with the very first verse. In Genesis 18:1 it says, "And the Lord appeared unto him," Abraham, "in the plains of Mamre." The word "appeared" is a translation of this Hebrew root. Who is appearing? Always in the King James, the word "Lord" is in all capital letters, and is God's personal name, also known as the Tetragrammaton Jehovah, or Yahweh as we know it. Verse 2 says, "And he," Abraham, "lifted up his eyes and looked, and lo, three men stood by him, and when they saw them, he ran to meet them from the tent door and bowed himself toward the ground." The word "looked" is a translation of the same root, but in this verse it applies to Abraham seeing God. Notice the root is used both to indicate God's appearance to Abraham and Abraham seeing God. Next we see Abraham bows and worships. Angels do not receive worship. However, Abraham worships because one of these three is the angel of the Lord. First, the Lord has an important message for Abraham and Sarah. "And he said, I will certainly return unto thee according to the time of life, and lo, Sarah the wife shall have a son." Finally, God has made his first promise to Abraham. God first made this promise to Abraham back in Genesis 12. Now in chapter 15, God made a covenant with Abraham concerning the promised son. And now finally, God tells Abraham and Sarah the long-promised son was going to be born. The Hebrew word ro'eh is derived from this root that we are looking at. Ro'eh is translated as seer 10 times in the King James and is a synonym for the Hebrew word navi, the standard word for prophet. The theological workbook of the Old Testament has a very interesting note about this word. Ro'eh designates the saving, understanding, believing acceptance of the word of God as delivered by its accredited messengers. Why did the Lord appear to Abraham in Mamre? I think the answer lies in the above definition of ro'eh. God told Abimelech in Genesis 20, verse 7, that Abraham was a prophet, a Navi. Abraham was one who could see God, or he could see what God wanted him to see when God wanted him to see it. Abraham saw God and saw the miracles of God, because Abraham had faith in God. He believed God, and so God reciprocated by appearing and showing Abraham all sorts of miracles. On this day at Mamre, Abraham saw God because he needed the promise that God was bringing to him. He had been patiently waiting for this day for over 20 years. Abraham needed a son so that the promises that God had made to him could be fulfilled. A very important biblical principle is here. We see God when we need God and when we have faith in him. God will appear when we need him and show us a new thing, or maybe he will show us something that we have overlooked. The writer of the New Testament book of Hebrews says in chapter 11, verse 1, "Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen." Hebrews 11, verse 10 goes on to state that Abraham did all his looking or seeing by faith. And so, if we want to be like Abraham, we must look with faith that we are going to see something good from God. And remember, others can benefit from our faith. When we look with faith, our life and the lives with those we love will be full of miracles. This has been a Hebrew Nugget, a Hebrew word study that's been provided by our good friend in ministry, Jackie Powell. I invite you to go to her website, lightforisrael.org, to learn this as well as to gain valuable access to Hebrew word study tools. Now then, let's turn our attention to Brother Mark Goshman with today's Bible lesson.
Welcome back to another radio broadcast. We have been looking at the names and titles of God. We will look at two additional compound titles of God, Yahweh Nisi and Yahweh Mekadesh. The Hebrew word Nes, found in Yahweh Nisi, the Hebrew word Nes derives from a verb, Nasas, which originally meant lifted up. The only time that verb appeared was in the 9th chapter of Zechariah, when the translators rendered it as ensign. An ensign can serve as a banner or standard, used to indicate rank or authority. In the passage above, God used that Hebrew term to indicate that he would lift up or exalt his people in this world, raising them up as though they were a precious possession. The noun nes could also represent an elongated vertical column, such as a pole. In the 21st chapter of Numbers, God instructed Moses to construct a brazen serpent and elevate it, using such a device. In that way, the thousands of Israelites bitten by fiery serpents could behold the brazen serpent. They could look upon it in order that they might live, as God directed. In some cases, the word nes metaphorically denoted a flag, something flown aloft as a marker to show others where to assemble. The prophet Isaiah used this word in the 5th chapter of his book, portraying God calling the Gentile nations to come to him. God used that same word in the 4th chapter of Jeremiah in relation to an impending invasion. Quote, set up a standard, nes, toward Zion, unquote. One of the most striking uses of the word nes, though, occurred in the 26th chapter of Numbers. Moses employed that word with regard to those whom God killed in the rebellion that Korah had instigated. He thereby implied that others who considered railing against God's choices of leadership ought to consider what happened to those people and abandon their intentions. The phrase Yahweh Nisi can be found in the 17th chapter of Exodus. The Israelites had just defeated the Amalekite armies at Rephidim. Moses built an altar at the location and called it Yahweh Nisi. By doing that, he may have intended to convey two different interpretations of that title. The verse following the naming of that altar explained that, quote, the Lord hath sworn that the Lord will have war with Amalek from generation to generation, unquote. Moses might have wanted to warn the Israelites that when future conflicts with Amalek arose, God would fight on behalf of the Israelites. In addition, Moses might have wanted them to recollect the miraculous nature of their victory. As long as he had lifted his hands towards heaven, God gave the Israelites the advantage over the Amalekites. Thus, every time they heard the name Yahweh Nisi, the Jews might think of the miraculous ways in which God granted them a victory at the Battle of Rephidim. Another title mentioned in this lesson is Yahweh Mekadesh. The latter word comes from the verb kadash, a Hebrew word which meant to sanctify or to make holy. The verb kadash first appeared in the 2nd chapter of Genesis, when God blessed the 7th day and sanctified it. In doing so, he set that particular period apart from the remainder of the week. He would make that distinction an essential part of the Mosaic covenant, as detailed in Exodus chapter 20. Quote, for in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all them in them is, and rested the 7th day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed, kadashed, hallowed it, unquote. In connection with the Mosaic covenant, the title Yahweh Mekadesh occurred in chapter 20 of Leviticus. God gave the Israelites statutes and ordinances, committing them to a higher standard of living than the laws of the nations surrounding them. As God's peculiar people, the Israelites had an obligation to show their non-Jewish neighbors all of the benefits that came with living under the laws of God. Be ye holy, for I am holy. That was the command that God most frequently gave to the Jewish people. In the context of the Leviticus passage, God summed up his requirements for the Jewish people. Quote, and ye shall keep my statutes and do them. For I am the Lord, which shall sanctify you. Yahweh Mekadesh. Since no other nation could truthfully make that claim, God required the Israelites to practice a greater degree of purity in their personal lives than the degree of purity practiced by the neighboring countries. As God's people and God's representatives, The Israelites owed God nothing less than that. We turn our attention to another compound name of God found in the Old Testament, the title of Yahweh Shalom. The noun Shalom carries with it a wide variety of meanings. It derived from the Hebrew verb shalem, which basically meant to complete. In the early books of the Old Testament, shalem appeared in contexts that had to do with paying back some debt or obligation. Joseph employed that term in Genesis chapter 44, when he ordered the steward to ask his brothers, quote, "Wherefore have you rewarded shalem, rewarded evil for good?" Unquote. In the 23rd chapter of Deuteronomy, Moses told the Jews that, quote, "When thou shalt vow a vow unto the Lord thy God, thou shalt not slack to pay shalem, to pay it." Shalem could also convey the idea of retribution rendered for injuries suffered. Moses warned his audience in the 7th chapter of Deuteronomy that God repayeth shalem, repayeth them that hate him to their face, unquote. In the 20th chapter of Proverbs, Solomon advised his son, quote, "Say not thou, I will recompense shalom, evil, but wait on the Lord, and he shall save." Most often, though, the verb shalem indicated making peace between warring factions. The king of Jerusalem utilized that word in that fashion when he appealed to his royal confederates in the book of Joshua. Quote, "Come up unto me and help me, that we may smite Gibeon, for it hath made peace, shalem, it hath made peace with Joshua and the children of Israel," unquote. One of the Proverbs of Solomon found in the 16th chapter of that book read like this, quote, "When a man's ways please the Lord, he maketh even his enemies to be at peace, shalem, peace with him." The cognate noun shalom usually indicated a state of peace. In the 9th chapter of 2 Kings, for example, various messengers sent forth from Jezreel to Jehu kept asking him, quote, "Is it peace? Shalom?" However, the word often described something more than a mere lack of conflict. The peace denoted by shalom denoted that state of inner tranquility that resulted from having a right relationship with God and toward other people. Psalm 85 contained a verse that addressed the blessedness of such a state. Quote, "Mercy and truth are met together. Righteousness and peace, shalom. Righteousness and peace have kissed each other," unquote. In the 26th chapter of Leviticus, God promised the Israelites that he would give them peace in their land. Within the context of that statement, he associated that condition with the absence of predatory animals in their midst, or opposing armies besetting them. The Aaronic blessing for the Jewish people, found in the 6th chapter of Numbers, utilized shalom in a similar way. Quote, "The Lord lift his countenance upon thee, and give thee peace," shalom. Shalom often applied to a person's physical health or well-being. For instance, when Joseph asked his brothers about their father's health, they replied, quote, "Thy servant, our father, is in good health, shalom." The title Yahweh Shalom occurred in the 6th chapter of Judges. God promised Gideon that he would lead the Israelites to victory against their Midianite oppressors. Upon hearing that news, Gideon constructed an altar and called it Yahweh Shalom. He might have intended that title to convey more than one idea. He could have built the altar as a way of commemorating God as the one who would bring peace to the Israelites, in the sense of ridding them of the Midianites. In addition, Gideon could have referred to Yahweh Shalom as a way of thanking God for granting him inner peace by selecting him to be God's deliverer, and for quelling his doubts about his ability to do God's will. We conclude another Radio Bible broadcast. Thank you for listening. Be sure to come back for future radio programs on this station.
You've been listening to the Everlasting Nation broadcast, a radio ministry of International Board of Jewish Missions. For more information, you can write us at P.O. Box 1386, Hickson, Tennessee 37343, or call us at 423-876-8150, or you may also go online at ibjm.org. Until next time, may God bless and shalom. Thank you.